3 days ago, two young men came to NPR's offices here in New York City, and they brought with them a computer printout 15 feet long. It contained, they said, private government documents from the U.S. Department of the Interior, documents that were sent from one part of the country to another electronically using the services of a private company called Telemail. Telemail is not part of the government. It is a message delivery system, and it has thousands of business and government clients. In fact, one of the young men showed me on a printout a client list.
Here you have Jet Propulsion Laboratories, you have Great West Life, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, TRW. You have NASA, the telephone company. They're all here. There's the Coca-Cola company.
What are you looking at?
I've got a directory of all the users that I can get from any accounts.
How did you get that?
By logging into an account that was left open.
My visitors would not tell me their names. On two earlier occasions, they'd called me and said they were associated with a newsletter for computer enthusiasts, which I received. It was mailed from a post office box on Long Island in New York. The printout they gave me did bear the name Telemail, and last October the 13th, the FBI conducted raids in 13 cities looking for a computer operator who went by the name The Cracker. The Cracker had somehow learned the secret identification number of one of Telemail's subscribers. The Cracker had distributed that secret number to computer users all over the country, who then entered the system and peeked at private messages. The FBI found The Cracker in San Diego. He was 15 years old, and they confiscated his computer. But the secret identification number is still around, and according to my visitors, it still works.
They left it open. No one has ever changed that account. Anyone can get in and get this listing.
I asked them when they last used the number.
I tried this a couple of days ago.
The young men said that after dialing the entry code and looking down a list of users, the next step was very simple. Every user, every authorized person in all those companies was given a password. And for a typical user, they said,
the password is A.
Just A.
One letter. You can go through 100 of them in a minute.
And that is what they did. They told their computer to run down a list of individual users to find out who was assigned, in this case, the password B.
The very first one I tried worked. And I was in. Welcome to Telemail.
They had entered the U.S. Department of the Interior's Bureau of Reclamation file. I know that because on the sheets I was shown, there were entire memoranda. One of them, for example, was written on September the 14th, 1983, from Billings, Montana, by a man named Rod Ottenbright.
Right, Bureau of Reclamation.
Now, I have read you the substance of two memoranda that I have here in front of me in New York that were given to me by these two fellows. Are they memoranda that you wrote?
Yes, they are.
Uh-huh. But it was a private communication between you and Mr. Marlowe Tusher in Washington, D.C.
That's correct.
And it was a government document.
Right.
So someone is reading your mail.
That appears to be the case.
In Washington, the man who received those memos, Marlowe Tusher, was not happy that I had them.
Those are internal government documents. They were not intended for any type of public release. There's nothing wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not classified. They're not secret. But they certainly were not intended to be anywhere except sent from Mr. Rottenbright to this office.
That means that I have indeed what they said I had.
I think you do. That is amazing.
Then I called Telemail, headquartered in Vienna, Virginia, and spoke to Claudia Houston, who is their spokesperson. She said she did not understand how the two men got into the system.
It would indicate to me that either there was insider knowledge, someone in the employ of a customer gave a new account and password.
But it wasn't a new account, said my visitors. They insist that the password was old, left over from the old FBI raid.
That doesn't seem correct. I don't know.
After the FBI raid, she says the Telemail told all its subscribers to change their passwords from 1 to 6-digit codes, and the system was adjusted, she says, so now it's up to the clients to protect themselves.
That's right.
So if a customer did not change from the one-letter system to a six-letter system, then that customer is vulnerable to these fellows who come snooping in the night.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
They should know that they really haven't accomplished anything after all the months of all the publicity surrounding this, and they should be looking for the penetration.
My two visitors say they were so offended at the ease of their own break-in, they decided to let Telemail know. So, after reading through the Interior Department's mail, when it was time to leave or log out, the system routinely asks, "Did you have any problems using telemail today?" They tapped in, "Yes." Then the system asked, "Is it a new or recurring problem?" They tapped, "Recurring." Then, "Please enter a full description of the problem you encountered." And here is their answer. This is a quote.
"This account has been compromised. Please take the necessary action. Your system leaves much to be desired as far as security is concerned."
The message was sent, according to my printout, at 1:14 a.m. March the 13th. NPR has learned that Telemail Security noticed that break-in announcement the very next day, and Marlene Bosworth of the U.S. Interior Department was informed that afternoon, March the 13th, that there had been an unauthorized entry. The route that my visitors took to that government file has now been blocked, which is exactly what they wanted to happen. That's one reason they broke in, they say. I turned to them and asked them, "Well, is that a real excuse? After all, you have committed a crime here."
It's not the same as breaking into a building.
Why? What's the equivalent then?
It's equivalent to, like, if you find a $10 bill on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. is anyone going to arrest you for taking it?
No.
Then why can't you draw the same kind of parallel to a computer that's left wide open on a phone line?
You know why.
The point I'm trying to make is, if the hackers don't break into these systems, if no one had ever broken into Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, I think it's very possible someone who had a reason to go in there would have, and would have done damage and might not have been detected. Today, the Sloan Kettering computer is secure. Who do you have to thank for that?
These two men who broke into telemail last week and read private government mail feel that one day they should be thanked. I'm Robert Krulwich in New York. "Suggested," she said, "and it was up now to the clients to protect themselves, not the company." My two visitors say that the company should impose stronger controls.
And they should be looking for the penetration.
In fact, they were so offended at the ease of their own break-in, they decided to let telemail know. So, after reading through the Interior Department's mail when it was time to leave or log out, the system routinely asks, "Did you have any problems using telemail today?" They tapped in, "Yes." And then the system asked, "Is it a new or recurring problem?" They tapped, "Recurring." Then, "Please enter a full description of the problem you encountered." And here is their answer. This is a quote.
"This account has been compromised. Please take the necessary action. Your system leaves much to be desired as far as security is concerned."
That message was sent, according to my printout, at 1:14 a.m. March the 13th.
There is a security department here.
NPR has learned that the telemail security department did notice the break-in announcement the next day, and Marlene Bosworth of the U.S. Interior Department was informed that very afternoon that there had been an unauthorized entry. Telemail says that the route my visitors took into that government file has now been blocked. The Interior Department is cooperating. But other telemail clients may still be very vulnerable. For example,
NASA, Coca-Cola. I was looking at plans for the space station before it was even announced.
My two visitors know they are breaking the law. What they do is very likely a federal crime. Nevertheless, they insist it's also a public service, a way to alert telemail and telemail customers to a security problem.
They should know that they really haven't accomplished anything after all the months of all the publicity surrounding this. They should, one way or another, be made to see that.
Yeah, but you're acting like it's some kind of public service, like you're, you know, you got your finger in a dike or something, like the little Dutch boy. This is a little Dutch boy who drills a hole in the dike and says, "Gee, this dike is a little thin," and then announces it to the local folk.
This is a little Dutch boy who walks around with a hammer hitting the wall looking for weak spots and finding them. When he finds them, he goes on to the next one. And the people supposedly fill up the hole.
Supposedly, telemail and the Interior Department did patch the hole through which my visitors slipped last Monday night. But my visitors, displaying perhaps less social conscience than the thrill of the chase, say they went back later in the week to see if their break-in message had been received. And they got in again.
Got in again. That's right. I can probably get in a third time.
I'm Robert Krulwich, reporting from New York.
Last week on this program, we reported how two individuals came to NPR's offices here in New York and showed us a stack of computer printouts. They contained copies of what seemed to be private government documents, so we checked with the authors of some of those documents, and they were private.
Those are internal government documents. They were not intended for any type of public release.
The two young men would not tell me their names, but they did say they had found the documents in a computer system of a private company called Telemail, based in Vienna, Virginia. And they had gotten in
by logging into an account that was left open.
Basically, they said, even though this company stores and transfers tens of thousands of private memos from major U.S. companies and U.S. government agencies, it is very easy to crack. A spokesperson at Telemail said she could not explain their ease of entry.
It would indicate to me that either there was insider knowledge.
But when these two visitors insisted that the way in was posted and available to thousands of computer enthusiasts across the country, then the spokesperson said,
that doesn't seem correct.
The two individuals said they were delivering the memos here to National Public Radio to alert Telemail and its subscribers to the vulnerability of the system. The break-in, they claimed, was a public service. In fact, they announced the break-in to Telemail, leaving a message that they had gotten in once and then twice.
I can probably get in a third time.
And after we ran the story, this fellow did get in again. That story caused a great many of you listeners to phone in, and among them was Jonathan Weiner, a man assigned by the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts to design a law to deter computer break-ins. These laws are not easy to design, and he wondered what our computer thieves would have to say on the subject, so we arranged a get-together. One of the men agreed to come to our studios in New York. We called Jonathan Weiner in Boston, and Weiner said he wanted to ask them just a couple of questions. Yeah, go ahead.
The first question is really, do you think that if you were a cop instead of a robber, you could track yourself down?
At this stage, I certainly know how to cover my trail, and I know lots of people out there know of very complex ways to cover up their trail. So,
is part of your question, Jonathan, that it once when you are inside a system, is your presence there detectable during the time you're tooting around?
Or afterwards?
I don't think so, at least not in this system.
How about after you've gone?
There's really very little fingerprints I can leave. If I wanted to be caught, you saw how long it took for them to do something once I told them that I had done it.
Right.
For me to be caught not telling them that, I'd have to do something extraordinary, such as create an account under a different name without their authorization. They'd see that come up, and they'd say, what's this? Who's doing this? That's when they'd start moving.
So they'd only know there was a break-in if you built a building on their front yard.
Basically, yes.
Going back to the question very briefly, you can go in, look around, take copy something, and leave without a trace.
It depends on the system. On Telemail, yes.
Can I design a system to prevent you from doing that so I can be sure that everybody who goes in is going to leave a trail?
You have my permission.
No, he's asking technically. Can
you, sure
you can. Can you put mud on the floor so there's always footprints?
Sure you can. It depends on the system. There are systems like that today where everything is monitored and anything out of the ordinary is noted.
Are they very expensive?
I don't know. I'm not in that business.
Okay. Assuming that there are laws out there which start getting enacted, which make it a felony to go in and do what you did, is that going to stop people?
No. The thing is, this is such an easy crime to get away with because all you have to do is route your calls a certain way and you can't be traced. If you don't draw suspicion to yourself, you can pretty much do this as much as you want. Apart from that, though, even if it was traceable to a certain person, I think if that person was infected with the hacking bug enough, he'd always be interested in doing this to some extent, and he'd always try somehow. It's in their nature.
I'm a little surprised that you don't show some fear of being put in jail.
Well, I don't think I'm doing anything. I haven't stolen anything. I haven't used anything for profit. I haven't passed information.
Oh, wait a minute. Can I just stop you right there for a minute? When you go into a computer system and you start looking at data, you're using computer time, right?
Yeah. How much computer time?
Now, there's a value to that computer time, correct?
I don't know what the cost of that is, but it's very minimal.
And certainly, even if it's not a larceny, it's a trespass. You're going onto somebody's property who would want you to keep out. True?
Well, I didn't see any signs saying no trespassing anywhere. At least when you're walking on someone's land, you might see a sign saying that. You know, you might get shot
at. What if you don't? Do you think you can
walk right now onto the White House lawn this afternoon and gaily prance because there are no keep-off signs?
There are fences.
You know what he's saying, don't you?
Yeah. All right. So I can't explain that. I can't explain. It's something that infects you. You feel this urge to just explore these worlds that are waiting by your telephone, and you have to experience it.
I'm working for the government, Emmanuel. I really am. I mean, I work for the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts, and we're trying to get this stopped because there are a lot of people with databases, government agencies, high-tech companies, schools. They get very uptight about people going into the databases, looking at them, taking things out, changing them. You know, the kids who change their grades for a lark, which happens from time to time, whatever. And so they're trying to figure out a way to deal with it. Now, if you suddenly are told, if on every, next to every computer terminal is a little thing which says, if you access a database without authority, you have committed a felony under state law, penalized by up to 1 year in prison and $5,000, does that begin to change anything for you? Or do you sort of shrug your shoulders?
Well, I think it's irrelevant whether it changes anything for me personally. It might. But I think you're fooling yourself if you're going to think that by making up these laws, you're going to prevent people from getting in. People are going to do it anyway. The only way you're going to really prevent people from entering your computers are to make them more secure and to encourage people to try to crack them. All right, that sounds crazy, but that's the only way you're going to prevent the really big professional people from getting in there and looking for things that they know are in there.
Oh, my.
Do you understand?
I hope you understood, because we've got to end this. Jonathan Weiner works for the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts. He is trying to design a law to stop people like our other guest this morning, a man who makes a habit of peeking in other people's computers. Mr. Weiner is hoping to finish drafting his law sometime this year. I'm Robert Krulwich in New York.
Thank you.
Virginia. That company is called Telenet, and it runs a mail service. That is, for a price, it offers hundreds of its clients, including U.S. government agencies, space in a computer to phone messages from all over the United States. The messages are held in that computer, and by phoning in a special code, a customer can read any messages left in his or her special mailbox. The four men indicted are alleged on numerous occasions to have broken into the system by phone. Then they occupied someone else's mailbox and allegedly began sending and receiving messages for themselves without paying. The Justice Department says the alleged conduct is in violation of the Federal Wire Fraud Act. One of those indicted, Eric Corley of Selden, New York, happened to visit NPR's New York studios last month. According to the indictment, between July 9, 1983, and October 12, 1983, Mr. Corley, without permission, entered the private mailboxes of the United Auto Workers, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, the Department of Agriculture, the 3M Corporation of Minnesota, the Rada Corporation, the Coca-Cola Company, Raytheon, and the Marivin Company, where presumably Mr. Corley had an opportunity to read the private messages that were there, as well as send and receive messages on his own. Mr. Corley never told us at NPR his real name, but he did appear on Morning Edition about a month ago to discuss his views on hacking. That's the slang term used to describe computer break-ins. On that show, a listener, Jonathan Weiner, called in to ask some questions. Weiner was drafting a law for the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts to try to prevent computer break-ins, and he asked Eric Corley, can someone design a system that can always detect a break-in?
Sure you can. It depends on the system. There are systems like that today where everything is monitored and anything out of the ordinary is noted.
But Corley said too many companies do not use sensitive detection systems.
The thing is, this is such an easy crime to get away with because all you have to do is route your calls a certain way and you can't be traced. If you don't draw suspicion to yourself, you can pretty much do this as much as you want. Apart from that, though, even if it was traceable to a certain person, I think if that person was infected with the hacking bug enough, he'd always be interested in doing this to some extent, and he'd always try somehow. It's in their nature.
Some people will always want to see if they can break a system, and they will try.
I can't explain that. I can't explain. It's something that infects you. You feel this urge to just explore these worlds that are waiting by your telephone. And you have to
understand. I'm working for the government. I really am. I mean, I work for the Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts, and we're trying to get this stopped because there are a lot of people with databases, government agencies, high-tech companies, schools. They get very uptight about people going into the databases, looking at them, taking things out, changing them. You know, the kids who change their grades for a lark, which happens from time to time, whatever. And so they're trying to figure out a way to deal with it. Now, if you suddenly are told, if on every, next to every computer terminal is a little thing which says, if you access a database without authority, you have committed a felony under state law, penalized by up to 1 year in prison and $5,000, does that begin to change anything for you? Or do you sort of shrug your shoulders?
I think you're fooling yourself if you're going to think that by making up these laws, you're going to prevent people from getting in. People are going to do it anyway. The only way you're going to really prevent people from entering your computers are to make them more secure and to encourage people to try to crack them. All right, that sounds crazy, but that's the only way you're going to prevent the really big professional people from getting in there and looking for things that they know are in there.
Oh, my.
Do you understand?
Eric Courtley was indicted yesterday by a grand jury sitting in Virginia. When we spoke with him by phone late yesterday, he was as yet unaware of the indictment. When we told him, he said he hoped he'd have time before his arrest to finish work on the latest edition of a newsletter he edits about hacking. I'm Robert Krulwich in New York.